New sponsor alert. Guys, I got to tell you about our new sponsor, T-Fury. It's the original pop culture t-shirt destination selling unique designs every day since 2008. I can barely remember that far back. I'm going to have to take their word on that. You can snag their shirts for only 24 hours starting at midnight. Man, I'm talking fast right now. Missing a shirt from the past and want to get it again? Head to the T-Fury Gallery where you can buy some old designs still in print and vote on others to come back from the dead. Zombie style. Every 2 to 4 weeks, T-Fury adds more designs to their gallery, so be sure to keep an eye out for the return of your favorite shirts. T-Fury shirts cover all your favorite topics and fandoms. Nerds, I am talking to you. They've got everything from gaming, sci-fi, anime, TV, movies, pop culture, and more. I can't imagine what the more is. I feel like they covered everything just then. Their t-shirts change daily, so check back as often as you'd like. Also, don't forget about the T-Fury After Hours sale. If you miss the day's shirt by only a little, they keep the sale going into the wee hours of the morning just for you. I can only imagine that means thousands upon thousands of t-shirt employees waiting for you to place an order. Please make their night. It sounds super depressing waiting up alone when a sale's going on. This December, T-Fury has some awesome shirts that'll make great gifts for the pop culture enthusiast in your life. If you're like me, that basically means that every website I go onto thinking I'm looking for gifts for other people, I just end up buying stuff for myself. Check out tfury.com, see what today's shirt is all about. T-Fury, here comes their slogan. I'm going to turn it into a song. Wear your art on your sleeve, on your sleeve. Hey guys, welcome to episode 89 of the JV Club as we lurch ever forward towards that delicious episode 100. Do I have any big plans for it? None whatsoever. I want to just jump into some shout outs straight away, guys. I want to acknowledge Anna S. for her email, Karen B. for her email, and adorable Cora Thanksgiving drawing. I want to thank Nita C. for managing the Tumblr account, Mike H. on Facebook. Mike H. on Facebook, Lizzie G. on Facebook, Ben V., Allison, Arlene, and Hannah also on Facebook. I want to thank from the Nerdist Mortified guests page, Joseph, Nicole, Dimitri, PJ, Kathy, Amy, Jenny, and Alec. Twitter has been, I don't want to say clogged up, but there's a lot of great Quora comments coming in, and I feel like maybe some of the podcast ones have gotten lost in the shuffle, so I don't have any podcast-specific shout-outs today off of Twitter, but I certainly thank you for tweeting me over there, and hopefully I'm getting back to you guys, or at least favoriting your tweets if they're podcast-related. I do hope everyone had a wonderful and fantastic Thanksgiving, if in fact that's something that you celebrate. And I also want to just acknowledge a sort of an informal sponsorship that we've put together. And by we, I mean me and this person that I'm about to tell you about, who is Melissa McDaniel. She is a fan and listener of the podcast, has become an email buddy, and does some quite wonderful photography of pets, cats and dogs, and has some marvelous books that not only kind of educate you about and acquaint you with some wonderful rescued dogs, some you know, sort of specific animal groups that you should know about and that you should be charmed by. Proceeds from the books, partial proceeds go to an animal organization. Actually, in this case, if you use the JV Club discount code, that's JV Club, you can use it lowercase, one word, two words, whatever you want, it'll still work. I get to choose which animal charity they go towards. So I'm very excited about that. And you also get a 10% discount in the mix. So this is a very good time of year to buy somebody who loves dogs or cats one of these books. And again, this is just sort of something that made sense to me because I checked out what Melissa was doing and I thought it was quite wonderful. So we're just partnering together to see how it goes. But I do encourage you to please check out the photographs. I promise you'll be charmed. I know we have a lot of animal lovers who listen to the podcast. Please head to melissamcdaniel.com. That's melissa-mcdaniel. So MCDANIEL.com, MelissaMcDaniel.com. I'm sure we can put that up on Pinterest and on the Facebook account as well. But again, you will be very charmed by these photos. So if you see an opportunity to buy someone a gift and do the world some good and support an artist, I encourage you to do so. That's it, guys. Let's head on in to Beth Littleford's episode. I'm such a fan of hers, and I'm so excited that she did the podcast. And I'm also excited to talk to you guys soon. So there.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
recording. So it's happening. It's happening in real time. I don't know what that means.
It's very exciting.
I'm so glad that you... Yeah, guys, so if any of you follow both of us on Twitter, then you probably... listen, I'm... What are these people just monitoring us 24/7? No, why would you already know about this? But I will say that I'm here with Beth Littleford. That goes without saying because you've opened up the episode that says Beth Littleford. But I am a fan of Beth's. We've known each other for years, but we used to run into each other a lot more, and then we just haven't recently.
No.
And you reached out on Twitter.
I reached out because I'm a super
which is so
fan.
Flattering.
I'm a super
Heavens
fan of
Betsy.
The JV Club.
Oh my gosh.
First of all, I'm such an old lady Luddite that I was like, podcasts, let's see, are they free?
What's the catch?
Wait, on my phone? Can I listen to it in the car? What? But I figured out I got a podcast app, and I just binged on the JV Club, and for so long I was just like, it's like we're talking about high school. It's the JV Club. It's like JV cheerleaders. It's like the JV. It's the high school. We're talking about high school. This is why I really shouldn't be in comedy. This is why I don't get things like, oh, JV stands for Janet Varney. Yes,
you are not.
I am the
it's a double meaning.
Ding-a-ling.
It's a double meaning, and there are many people who have put it together late.
I was a real latecomer
totally fine.
To the putting it together.
It's totally fine. I just outed myself as I have this theory that I have a low IQ because I feel like spatial relationship stuff I'm very bad with, and like basic logic. Like I was telling you, I had the two mortified girls on, and so I play the MASH game at the end, and yes. So I was playing a double game of MASH, but I used the same number for, you know, it was like, tell me when to stop, and it was six. And I painstakingly went through and did the process of elimination on both, whereas I could have just gone, oh, okay, so if it's the third one for this one, then I can just circle the third one for this one. Like, I don't...
Yes, and I think I'm good with logic, but I've just lost you. So, yes.
Oh, well, there
well,
you go.
Here's the thing that I think, as I think we all have our areas of strength and weakness. And I think for so long I was like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do well on tests. I actually tend to do... very well with logic and spatial relations, but I'm so dumb sometimes. I'm so dumb, and it's just like, you know what? I have different strength. You know, there's some ways in which I'm pretty
absolutely
smart. I'm kind of a mathlete.
Are
I
you?
I used to tutor
so envious
math for SATs and stuff, and my sister, who never achieved academically, you know, kind of what I did, used to be like, for a smart person, you are the dumbest. She's just going like, you are the dumbest. You are the. Sometimes I just feel like, gosh, yeah, that was really dingy, wasn't it? I mean, you know what? It could be ADD.
Dingy is a great word,
but
though.
But it's dingy. I feel dingy like
I
Vera from Alice. Is everyone out there too young to know the sitcom Alice?
Do you remember Vera? I'll tell you this. It was around, but I didn't ever watch it.
You know what? And I was probably seeing reruns. It's 70s. It's hardcore 70s sitcom with... who was Alice? Linda something? And then Mel, was it Mel's Diner? Was it Vic? I don't know.
You're kept, sort of like, you know, I'm requisite of, one name,
yes.
one syllable
Vera,
guy.
Flo was the Texan, kiss my grits. And mm-hmm. Vera was the dinghy waitress. And she was very sweet and well-meaning, but he kept calling her dinghy. And sometimes I feel like I can be sweet and well-meaning and dinghy is all get out.
You know, what's interesting about dinghy too, is that it's a great word. It's very... gender specific, like
just for the ladies.
It's just for ladies.
I know.
It's a bit sexist, right? It's
I know.
A bit anti-feminist. But
and
I think
I don't like to
but
put
if you
myself
call yourself
down.
That, but
I like, don't I, like it. Yeah. You know what? I'm such a fan of Tina Fey, Liz Lemon's 30 Rock, and I remember there was a moment where she looked in the mirror on the episode and she was berating herself and she said, "You stupid," and that was hard enough to watch and hear. Maybe we've all done it, but she goes, "You stupid bitch," and I was like, ouch, I can't turn it off. It hurt too much.
Yeah.
I was sad. I was sad and mad. I was sad and mad at
sad
Tina Fey.
Mad. Yeah.
For calling herself a stupid bitch. Because that just seemed, that took like the self-hatred and kind of this sort of internalized misogyny to another level.
Oh, you're right though.
Yeah.
God,
so
you're
any
right.
Schmoo. Any schmoo. It's so interesting. I just got a prescription for ADD medication because it was a while ago. I read a book called You Mean I'm Not Lazy, Crazy, or Stupid, written by two women who were in their adulthood diagnosed with ADD and realized like their tennis game couldn't improve because they couldn't focus, you know, enough. And why couldn't they? It was always, things were always sort of spilling out of their lives, you know, literally and sort of metaphorically, and that gals don't get diagnosed with it like boys do because boys have the hyperactivity component much more often.
Exactly. And women try to hide things from other people like that.
We're trying to spin a million plates in the air.
Yeah.
And I'm certainly trying to just keep up and keep it all going. And there is a ton that I bring upon myself and just a ton that I have to handle with two kids and and working and whatever and a family. It's so interesting. I'm not 100% comfortable with the ADD medication, but I thought for the podcast I would try to take it and be sharper.
Uh-huh.
And I can't remember whether I took it or not.
The ultimate irony.
Which I think means I didn't take it.
I don't know. Yes, but yeah.
I don't know. But this meandering sort of Vera, Vic, Alice sitcom conversation I just had with you makes me think I did not remember to take it.
I certainly have... the same disposition. And I think it's one of the reasons that the podcast it meanders as it does and that it is so tangential and non sequitur and why I can't just say a sentence that is like a very clean cut sentence. It's like five sentences in one.
But you're lucid and you keep up with everyone and they keep up with you and you follow through and get back on track. And I love ladies who can do this, by the way. I mean, these are my gals who can sort of take these loopy trails with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's because, I think if the willingness, you know what? It's interesting that you just say that. Here we go off on a tangent, but very related. It's interesting that you would say that because I'm feeling like I would liken my career or the idea of being flexible with where your life takes you the same way that the microcosm of that is conversation, which is like you don't know what you might miss if you're not willing to kind of derail.
To derail and take the off-road. Yeah. Go off-road a little bit. I love that. And I love that because I think I've struggled with what I should be doing and where I should be and what's next.
And what your ambition should be and how much you should stick to each.
A lot of the shoulds, like shooting on my, they say don't should on yourself, which
that's
like that
That's
phrase.
A really good one.
So, and instead of trying to, if you're living in the future, if you're living in the past, you're pissing on today. I know I'm coming up with kind of the annoying little aphorisms here. But I'm trying to, that it will be taken care of, that I will end up where I need to be. So I'm just going to keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
And so it's conversationally and in the bigger picture.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I like that. That's where I have to live right now because... life's crazy.
Life is crazy.
Life's a little cray.
It's a little bit.
And you got to embrace
it. It's a lot cray.
You got to kind of love it. You got to like work on all the things, the gratitude for the things that are great.
Yeah.
And the roll with it for the things that are tough. And I mean, what I love about your podcast is listening to that everybody's had their struggles. Like nobody's had an easy road. I think when I was in high school, I was like, why do these gals all seem... really? Like the gals that I think I was kind of supposed to be and supposed to hang out with, sort of groomed, maybe a pretender to that throne a little bit. But I could have perhaps been. I know that I was trying to be a cheerleader on court, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And wasn't. And didn't quite. And didn't make it.
Yeah.
And ended up being a bit of a freak. And I would look at them and I'd be like, how do they do it? Are they cream puffs? Because I feel like I'm filled with a dark goo.
Did you feel like that? I mean, not to just jump right into it, but first of all, where did this take place?
That I have heard various podcasts recently, and I've been listening to yours and Morgan Walsh's, Mo Gaffney and Morgan Walsh have one, where I've heard people refer to Central Florida as just, it is kind of a suburban Orlando. It's a punchline in and of itself.
Yeah.
Florida gets the shaft, and I think it deserves to get the shaft, frankly. It is a bit of a freak show. But I grew up, so it wasn't just like Florida where a lot of weird shit's going down. A lot of people are pouring in from all over because they got kicked out of their own state or whatever.
Right.
But there's also some old Southern, really conservative. So our town, Winter Park, was in the preppy handbook, and there was a lot of old South to it, which is not my bag. It's not my bag at all. It's kind of my sister's bag.
Yeah,
my
if you had said like I was born and raised in New York City, I would be like,
I went to New York City, I was like at 20, 21, I was like, my people.
Yeah.
My people. And you know what? And I had to get super toughened up. I mean, I was really just completely taken advantage of for years and had to really like just, I put myself through the ringer of New York City as a sort of like, I'm just going to toughen up. Like, every day is an adventure. Every day is a lesson. But there was something about also the freedom of letting your freak flag fly, mm-hmm. of just, it's this big roiling city where in no way am I going to be looked at side, you know, askance, looked askance at for anything I do.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm, you know, I am the sanest person in the city, for God's sakes. Whereas I feel like in my tiny town of Winter Park, I was a bit of a freak.
And this is you and your sister.
My sister is... if we're going to back up and give you the landscape of my family, do you want the landscape?
Why not?
Of my family?
Yeah. Because where I was going was, I was going to ask you about
the landscape,
the dark goo inside,
like,
of you,
okay, so,
and whether you felt the dark goo was there before some events that we're going to get into in a little bit, or whether you that transformed you.
I think the dark goo comes from, and again, what I was talking about was the girls on your podcast. Like, is it, do we all go into comedy? Does everyone scratch the surface of comedy and there's some tragedy? You know, do we all then end up, is that why the girls on your podcast have all sort of talked in some way, mm-hmm. about something that's they've struggled with, or mm-hmm. there's, you know, nobody's had the picket fence life, really. I mean,
too, you know, even the people that aren't in comedy, like I've talked to some more serious actresses and also some writers and people like that who, you know, aren't necessarily medicating what they go through in a positive way with comedy. You know, I'm not saying it's like a crutch, but sometimes it can be. But, you know, right. I think it is. I think it's so universal that it, like,
everybody's struggling at some, certainly adolescence is a struggle. Certainly childhood is tough in a lot of different ways and a lot of different people. I feel like, I remember we had a German au pair, she's briefly for a summer, mm-hmm. That later said to me, my mom and I went to Germany when I was in my young 20s, and I remember saying to her, like, oh, I just felt like my older sister Ruth, gosh, you know, everyone just sort of bonded with her more, and I don't know that, you know, you and she, you loved her so much and you guys had such a connection, and she goes, well, she was so cute and you were so morose as a child.
Oh, so even back then
I was like, maybe I had the sad goo more than others. Mm-hmm. I know I'm sensitive. I know I'm super sensitive. And
were both your parents, were they together, and were either of your parents exhibiting anything like that? Like sort of pensive?
I think there was some, I think my dad had, I think he had some heavy mood swings. It's like, you know, my dad was really, he would go dark, he would go light. He could be huge and magnanimous, and then he could go really angry. He could get very removed. I worshipped him and had a very close relationship with him, and was sort of a daddy's girl. But that afforded me not much because he was gone so much, and it also created a lot of friction between my mom and
Where
I.
Was he? Where was he?
He was a doctor. So he mm-hmm. was he was a workaholic. He wasn't an alcoholic, but there was enough isms that I feel like I love me some alcoholics from the day I started looking at men. Like, I love those bad boys. I don't know if they did something for me. I could just spot across those greasy bad news motherfuckers. I will spot them across the room. And, you know, I'm like a teetotaler. I don't even drink, you know? Yeah. I am such a straight gal. I mean, I drink, you know, I get a glass of wine, I have a headache. So what happened is that my parents, there's a lot of sort of confusing messages. I feel like my mom is such a loving gal who she didn't have great stuff given to her growing up. And I don't think it wasn't a great marriage for her. I mean, he kind of abandoned her in the marriage. And then we were sort of born again. Like, there was this incredible, they were both children of priests, pastors, whatever. Very Christian. So very born again. And that coming with the hellfire and damnation, a lot of shame and stuff. So there was that.
That's heavy.
And then it was heavy. And there was this whole thing where, you know, and a lot of that sort of spare the rod, spoil the child, you know, the belt whippings and stuff, the punishment that was kind of intense. And then a lot of sort of creepiness around that. I mean, there's a lot of reasons that I think I had some sadness and some darkness. And I think I probably adopted some of my dad's, got some of my dad's biochemistry. But and then he left the family, had an affair with a gal who babysat for us.
Yeah.
And so, and that just turned everything upside down. Mm. So upside down.
Yeah.
So just chaos. And then the cherry on top of that kind of chaotic cake was that, you know, he was doing sort of the divorce dad trips with us where, you know, he'd take me to New York.
And you were the middle child.
I was the middle
older
child.
Older sister, younger brother.
Older sister, younger brother. Yeah. And we were coming, it's the interesting thing too about, like I say, it was this wealthy town, but we were then coming into money because we started off kind of broke. He's like coming out of med school broke. Sure. And then he had like a business partner, like abscond or something. So then we were coming into, so he was coming into sort of midlife crisis, nouveau riche. I'm going to buy a nice car and get myself a nice condo and take you guys on these trips. And one of the trips is he took my little brother, who had just turned 12, to Alaska on a hunting and fishing trip. And they went out in a pontoon plane with a guide and a pilot that ended up sinking in the bay and sort of getting pulled out by the tide. And then my dad and brother didn't make it back. So we're missing, basically. So it's a very... I had the dark goo before, but it was extra gooey and dark after that. It was very...
And that happened when you were 16?
I just turned 16. Didn't have a good relationship with my mom. Didn't have a great relationship with my sis. Everyone was acting. Everyone was dealing with it in the best way they could. I am grateful now that I had two, each year, my junior and my senior year, I had two best friends. The senior, one of them junior year, proved a little bit fair weather. Sometimes I can pick the fair weather gals, but I had a steady best friend and I had two really loving best friends. Pretty much my junior and senior year, I would just spend the night at their house. Their families reluctantly, because I was smoking cigs at that point and wearing only men's clothes, like just like my dad's clothes,
you weren't
and like
just
found
like,
items.
You
on
were
the
a
beach.
Lost lamb and not necessarily
I was a total
the kind
lost lamb
that
and
other
not
parents
the best,
were.
Right? Because
yeah.
I had already at some point I had been oh I had kind of run away from home and told my dad like you have to let me live with you. So I had kind of had this real independent. Like he just kind of gave me a car and some money, and then I was on the loose. Like so, thank God I never really found my way into drugs and alcohol because this would be the time right. I had someone take me aside after the a teacher take me aside after the memorial service and say, you're going to want to, you know, numb your feelings with drugs or alcohol. So, and it's like, no, alcoholics. Yes. Like the boys. I became sort of boy crazy and caught up in sort of those dramatic
interesting.
Things.
Well, that yeah. makes sense too. Yeah. That's actually, that does really make sense because I mean, it's just interesting to see how people manifest like, yeah, their sense of loss or whatever. There's something about the idea of the relationship that you had with your dad and the relationship that you lost with your dad that you would want to medicate with human beings
sure.
instead of medicating
some
with
of the
substances.
Stuff that I had with my dad. I mean, it's a little bit, you know, psychoanalysis 101, you know, not to simplify it too much, but it certainly is. I mean, you know, a lot of it is about sort of recreating and hoping that it, you know, ends more happily. Mm-hmm. You know, so this, you know, and this, so this whole thing, what I like, and I guess if you have young listeners out there, the message is not like, oh my God, I've had a lot of tragedy. I mean, the message is like, this makes me who I am. Mm-hmm. I like who I am. Other people I know who've had tragedy have a depth of, you know, of course everyone has, but I mean, I feel like it gives people a depth of feeling and potentially real connection, empathy that, you know, that I'm really drawn to.
Absolutely.
And it, you know, that you can be a better partner, a better parent, a better friend. You're certainly not, I think life becomes then bigger and deeper than like, what, you know, what club should we go to tonight? Which is, yeah. you know, of course.
Did you have that sort of, rightfully so, I guess, cliche not being a great word for something that just seems like it would be a universal experience where you had, because I know, like, for example, Stephanie Escajeda has done the podcast and her older brother died of AIDS when she was in high school. Oh, and just, you know, that same idea of like being that very specific age where, you know, it's kind of supposed to be okay for your world, for you to be as solipsistic as you ever yes. will be in your life. Like
it is.
As a child, yes. there's something about teenagerhood that just makes you so introspective and so self-obsessed and
yes.
so staring at the mirror.
Yes. You're not,
and all
you're not
of that.
Supposed to be, you know, you're and, not supposed to be a parent. You're yeah. not supposed to be taking care of anybody, but you're yeah. supposed to be getting through this crazy fucking time.
Exactly. And your hormones are going crazy and all yeah. that kind of stuff. And so this idea of like being given this huge ball of and like, I was guess like, what? No, life is bigger than this.
Yeah. And I, at that point, I was like, no, thank you very much. Yeah. People would come to me and, you know, people who were, you know, people would come to me with their feelings. And these are people who knew my dad and brother, you know, who were friends of the families and want to cry. And I would be like, sorry, I got a dance at the high school that I need to get to, you know? Yeah. And then I was dancing at that dance at the high school. And I remember the principal pulling me off the dance floor. And I thought, oh, it's because I'm dancing too suggestively or too crazily.
In your men's clothes.
In my men's clothes. This is how preppy this town was. In junior high, I was invited to an exclusive cotillion where I wore a velvet pantsuit. And I was the only gal in pants, and that caused a little ripple of scandal. And then they played the B-52s Rock Lobster, and I got down on the ground and did the, I don't know what's it called, but you know where you gyrate, the
yeah, like a seizure,
where you have a seizure. But there's
like, yeah, what is it called?
The gator? It's called some animal. I didn't take my ADD medication. but anyways, I gyrated with the boys.
Okay, yeah,
I was kicked out.
Ripples of scandal.
I was kicked out.
You were kicked out.
I was kicked out of the cotillion and they weren't. The pants thing was tipping it. And then on the ground, gyrating, jiggling was too much.
How do they approach getting rid of you?
I think it's just like, you know, you can't do that. And you just, we'll call your mom. I think it was like, we'll call your mom. I can barely remember. I was 14, I guess.
Because it's such a specific, I mean, it really is like a movie, like some sort of
I know. These are all such stories that need to like make it into, I got to write a book.
Oh, for sure.
These are tales that I tell. And one of the tales is the one I was starting with, the principal pulled me off the dance floor and I thought I was going to get scolded, shamed, whatever. And he said, I just want to make sure you're okay. And I was literally like, why are you dancing to? Am I dancing to? I had a couple of these instances where the boy I had a crush on, like, he said, no, I want to make sure you're okay with it. And I was like, yeah, let me get back to the dance. And I remember the boy I had a crush on, and the crush became slightly obsessive. He had been my boyfriend in junior high. I had cheated on him because I was a numbskull, and I thought that somehow protected me against getting my heart broken.
Well, we're full-grown adults still doing that every moment.
And it broke
moment.
His heart, and he was like, absolutely not. He was like a strong-jawed Southern man. I can get my boat and truck. And he was just like, absolutely not. And then kind of then when it's over, and then I'm sort of then again back junior year, I just was hungry. I was just needy and hungry, and I would sort of chase him around town, and he had a pretty younger girlfriend at that point. And at some point he kind of pulled me aside at a keg or so, I don't know what, and he said, I want to talk to you. And I was like, I know you're with Kathy and she's really pretty and her see-through braces look really great, and I know you want me to like stop, I'm sorry. And you know, I wasn't stalking, but I clearly was still hungering for him. And he was like, no, I was just going to say that I think they're alive. And I was like, who? And he was like, your dad and brother. And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, I just have a feeling like that maybe they got picked up by the Russians or something. Maybe there's like a Russian tanker. He wasn't that bright. But I sort of pictured it like maybe could they have been picked up by a Russian tanker? They'd like the Bering Straits. Uh-huh. Way up there in those waters, it's crazy. It was
and,
absolutely
but him
crazy.
Wanting to like
he
be
wanted
able to comfort
he's a,
you.
He's a sweet
in some
guy.
Way. Yeah,
he's a bit of a dumb dumb. He's a sweet guy, and he wanted to comfort me. And it was so interesting. These misunderstandings. I was so checked out of this tragedy that was, you know, around me like a marquee. I mean, it was a small town, and it was all anybody could see about us and our family. And my mom really was wearing it like a, you know, like an outfit and a cloak, and sort of in people who would turn their back on her when my dad left her. We're now coming back and sort of paying homage and all that. And she was really...
Why would they turn their back on her when your dad did the doing?
It was in a very
social
Christian
awkwardness
community. In a very Christian community, divorcees. Not that she's like... You know, I say divorcee and it's... You know, you think of someone smoking a cigarette in a Halston dress.
Yeah.
No, my mom was like... She's just like the sweetest lady. You know? I mean, she wasn't sweet to me growing up. We had a hard time growing up. But she's a real sweet... You know, my husband said... My husband who's, you know... skeptical about church ladies says she's a, you know, as most of us are, I am too, but she's a Christian in the best sense of the word. I mean, she was like, you know, she was early on with like going to, see AIDS patients in hospital. I mean, we just spoke with this, so it's on my mind, but you know, she was doing freedom rides in the 60s. I mean, she's a good loving gal who I think was kind of like a plant that got no water in that marriage and sort of like just withered and wasn't able to be much of a mom for me then. But, and then, you know, but our tragedy, quote unquote. She was very big on our tragedy. I was very big on checking out and like, don't remember. I don't mark it as a date. You know how some people mark mm-hmm. the date?
And you still, you to this day, you don't.
No, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't. And I have to say, I'm still dealing with some feelings and post-traumatic stressy stuff around both what was going on in my family growing up and also that loss. So, you know, I did check out for a long time, but now many, many, many years later, and as a mom, I think it brings stuff comes up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sure.
I think having a son, then he hits a certain age that's
oh God, close of course.
To, you know, there's a sort of an echo of my brother.
Yeah.
And then now that I have a girl, a baby girl, I have a 20-month-old girl.
How old is your son?
My son's 8.
Yeah. How old was your brother?
My brother just turned 12, but there was a way in which I felt as the family was kind of falling apart and stuff, I really started to feel like I mothered him when he was, you know, 6, you know, around, you know, when my son was hitting these ages, there was a sort of a hologram thing happening with my, I think a little bit, which yeah. is kind of that sort of grief and love that how that's the,
yeah.
you know, that's all a piece.
Yeah.
So anyways, and then how kids and, you know, but people can break your heart open with love. And then, you know, so, and that's how I feel about my kids. So what do I want to say? God, where was I? So anyways, but I went into heavy denial. And I think as a 16-year-old, good for me.
Absolutely.
Good for me. And I found families that took me in.
Yeah.
That's you know, into my adulthood, like appreciated and loved me, even if I seemed like a little bit of the bad seed, like tearing up, smoking a cigarette in my like Jeep with the music blaring. And yeah, and wearing clothes that I've literally pulled out of the sand on the beach or that were my dad's that I sort of like flash danced and cut open and like, you know, whatever. Yeah. And,
you what know, music would you, just a total side note to set the tone too, what know, music would it be that you were like cranking in the Jeep?
You were, yeah, I know you've talked about music with some of your guests.
I'm always interesting. Yeah, I'm always interesting. I just said, that's not the truth.
Yeah, I was not... People would ask my older sister, like, can your sister get us pot? I didn't, at some point, I never was a real pot. I'm too neurotic to smoke pot. I did. I tried to make myself drink. I tried to smoke pot. I would hang out with sort of pothead types and countercultural types. This was before grunge, but I was definitely hanging in a little bit of a grunge scene.
Mm-hmm.
So I was definitely listening to some hippie music. I was listening to some, you know, there's sort of Talking Heads. Yep. And that was
that's
when
what
Stop
I was
Making
imagining
Sense
somehow,
came out, you know, and Elvis Costello and that kind of stuff. But you know the music that I love to this day that gets my endorphins going and that I will break out right now and dance on your in your room here? I will dance to old school funk.
Oh, that was
my
sure.
I went to Hoplock Junior High. And it, so it's just like, you know, you dropped a bomb on me. Now that's overplayed. There's a little other, you know. Some other Gap bands. You Burn Rubber on Me is a favorite. It's less played.
Okay.
But that's, you know, but whatever I was blaring, my sister was a little more into like the mm-hmm. Cure, the mm-hmm. like Husker Du. Like she was mm-hmm. a little more into those 80s punkety punks. Bands and a little more new wave. And she also had her before that sort of junior high, you know, we're blaring AC/DC. I remember there was like a church gathering at our house and Ruth put on Pat Benatar's, my older sister put on Pat Benatar's Hell is for Children and put the needle down, a little record player in her room and blared it out so that the church gathering could hear Hell is for Children.
And now this is, this is your sister that you felt like got a little bit more of a,
was,
along with your mom and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, she got a little bit along with my mom, but she was more of the partier and a little bit more of the bad seed in a way than I was, but she also fit in more than I did. So she did make court. And this is with actually a lot of stuff against her too, because she never had a growth spurt, so she's super short. She's like 4'8". She's kind of a chubby gal, you know, she, you know, kind of got the shaft with like struggling in school with dyslexia and, you know, like jacked up teeth. And so she definitely was like, but she was so popular. She just was such a popular gal. She just has millions of friends.
Hmm.
So she was out there, you know, so she like this on senior games day. And, you know, they're all on a team called Ahab's Dubage because there's a line I hear you talk about you just watched Breakfast Club. There's a line in Breakfast Club. I didn't remember it then. I was like, why are they calling themselves Ahab's Dubage? It's because Judd Nelson says to Michael Anthony,
what's his face?
Oh, Anthony Michael Hall.
Anthony Michael Hall.
Yeah.
Says, hey, Ahab, where's my dubage? Because he put the pot down his pants. He's, hey, Ahab, where's my dubage? So they call themselves Ahab's dubage. So Ruth was cooler than I was. She was more popular than I was. So she did make court. And in a way, it was like she was one of the people. Yeah. She wasn't tall and gorgeous, which the rest of this sort of, it was a giant high school. So you had to look like you, Janet Varney, to be on the homecoming court.
Which, as you know, I had nothing to do with and was not a part of in any way.
Crazy,
when I was there.
Like, you know, with just your single dad and whatever, right? But in this town, it was all about kind of living that life. And so I found my way into sort of grungy crowds and people who, you know, some of them had graduated high school. I don't, one guy wasn't even in high school. He was bad news, but I don't know, dropped out, whatever. But I still had my solid two, was keeping me on the straight and narrow in terms of just, you know, again, it wasn't drugs and alcohol, but I could have derailed, I think, just emotionally.
Yeah.
More than I, you know, I got into a good college. I struggled there, but I found a best friend there. I mean, I've been lucky because I remember hearing you speak about this, with having like one friend, like having a person.
I bring that up a lot because I'm really interested in that.
I feel like I've been lucky. Like there's been a lot of loss. I was looking for love in all the wrong places for decades when I was younger with dudes. I was a mess. But I feel like I have, I've had a few girlfriends who've seen me through so much. And to this day, I write the best friend from high school sometimes and say, hey, thanks for being there for me.
Oh, I love that you're still checking in.
I feel real choked up about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other one I kept in more touch with, we could not speak for years. And then we saw each other right before we adopted our baby girl. And I just wanted a chance to, I don't know, we hadn't talked in years. And we met each other in Santa Fe and just spent 24 hours there and talked nonstop. We just talked nonstop. It was just, it's really nice to know, because I think when you know, if you're not getting needs met in a lot of other places, and there's this sense of like, there's stuff wrong with me.
Yeah.
There's stuff wrong with me.
Yeah.
I haven't really been reflected back to myself by my parents in a way that we all...
Yeah.
Hey, we're all trying to do for our kids now, perhaps too much.
Yeah.
Oh, look at you. You're drawing.
Yeah.
You know, perhaps it's a little, people
let
are swinging
a little.
Let me help
you define who you are, and I want you to know I see you.
We were all raised by wolves, and now we're all like reflecting our children back.
I see you. I'm right here. I see you.
I see you jumping. Yeah. Aren't you jumping?
Yeah.
But anyways, but one of these friends was so smart that she said to me at 16, she said, you just need to be reflected back to yourself. Kind of meaning in
a
loving way.
Yeah, I just like clamped down on for a second mentally when you were saying that about the idea of kind of looking for love in the wrong places and the relationship that you had or didn't have with your parents. And I've talked about this, I'm sure, before, but that feeling that, and part of why I love the podcast and why I get so much from getting notes from you guys is that we are these social creatures who ultimately, even more so than being seen, I think there's this yearning to feel known. And so if you're looking to feel known by a man and you're picking the wrong ones and your family isn't really, you don't feel a big integral part of your family in a way that you feel understood, then having that friendship with a girl who you feel she's, I'm known, I'm recognized,
I'm
known.
I'm a good person, I'm lovable, I'm recognized and known and loved for all of me.
Yeah.
Because I think the other thing about whether it was the born again or this very conservative town or just, again, not the best parenting that we could have hoped for is that you just feel like, okay, there's some like dark parts they're not okay. And I feel like the work even I'm doing now, it's easier to do, feeling known by friends, feeling known. But, you know, I have a husband that I've been married to for many years, and although we still can struggle, you know, I am known and loved by him. And then also that whole thing of like, okay, like embrace the shadow self too. Like we all, you know, bring in the shadow, you know, bring in that whole idea, which was very Southern. It was very female. It was very Christian of you are supposed to be 100% pure of heart and mind. Mm. You are supposed to be, you know, pleasing to all. You are supposed to fit, you know, you are supposed, you know, it's tough. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And so I thought there was something wrong.
Ugh. Did you keep a journal?
I wish that I had. I think that would have helped.
You do? Yeah. I guess it would. Yeah. I mean.
Right. You journaled, right?
I did. And I will say it did help. I think it helped. I mean, I think there are times when, you know, as I got older. Yeah. You know, it's funny because I was with the Mortified Girls. I was looking more at journals from like when I was really, I just have still these out because I just recorded them not too long ago too. These are old. Like these are really, I mean, some of them are more like these are like 10 years old or, and then I think at some point in here, I start getting into like the 14 years old. So you see in the same journal, the really
handwriting.
Bubbly. Well, this I think is the young handwriting actually.
Oh, even younger than
88. So 88. So this is when I was 12, but then this is when I was a teenager. So this is like, I do drugs and stuff.
Oh, the handwriting changed completely.
Completely 100%. Changed.
They wouldn't think it's the same changed. Person.
And I do think that it really helped a lot, but I also feel like, yeah, it's so, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it might have, you know, in the way that like a journal can be your friend and can be somewhat, be the place you go to tell your secrets and can reflect you back to yourself.
Yeah.
And by the way, I wish I did more writing now just to like dump the garbage. It's just like, I occasionally will just like try to like scribble some worries down. You know, that whole thing of like, if you wake up in the middle of the night, like just scribble the worries down, you know, put them in a box.
Yeah.
Get it off your chest. Let somebody else take care. You know.
Yeah, those are pretty good exercises.
Let the universe take care of it.
Well, yeah. I was just going to say, I think because it sounds like you and I, even just before talking on the podcast, that we both have that kind of, that like, it makes sense to me that you wouldn't, for another reason, that you wouldn't necessarily be into numbing and stuff like that, because if you have the kind of control,
yeah, the
stuff,
vigilant,
and like
the
wanting to feel like I've controlled this and it's going to be, and I can manage this and I can do all this on my own or
right.
whatever
I could never
that
shroom.
Is.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
What? No,
yeah,
I can't trip, really, for God's sakes.
Yeah. I definitely did, but now I guess just because it doesn't feel that good to be out of control because I knew what it was like to feel high when I wasn't high, but so it's very specific. But the same thing with like worrying and stuff is like, how do you learn to give it over and know that like, just because you're worrying about something doesn't mean that
there's
a solution
that
you're
not. You're not keeping the plane in the air by gripping the armrest.
Exactly.
Right. And, it's because, you know, so it's these kind of things where like, oh, okay. So these survival tactics that we had growing up are no longer that useful, or they're getting in the way of you enjoying life, or letting go, or not bugging the hell out of your husband, or whatever it is by your like micromanaging or you know, whatever. So these are things I try to work on, you know, letting go with my kids, you know, sitting on my hands, not being that helicopter parent. I'm frankly too distractible. The ADD doesn't,
it's doing you
it
a weird
balances
favor.
Out the anxiety and the worry is balanced out by this sort of like, whoops, what?
I was super anxious about that until something else happened. I saw a flashing movement over in the corner of my eye. And then I
so now my child's falling off the wall and getting up, and they're okay. They're fine. Good. All right. Hi, mommy's here.
No.
Yeah. So, it actually balances out.
Well, this is like a super gross way of just asking this question, but like, where did
Tell
you
me.
Went like, because you're funny and because you're certainly known for that amongst other things, when did you kind of exhibit that? Like, did you try to crack your family up, or is your family funny? You know, where did
my
you
family's not funny.
I guess I can't say I'm surprised based on what you just said, but
my sister's my dad when he was up, when he was in a good mood, he was a very boisterous laugher, and it's the laugh I have now, which is it's this inhale laugh, which sometimes people like to do, and on my little show I'm on now, they make me do it a lot. People think it's fake, but when I've lost my mind, I'm on a plane watching a movie with headsets on,
right,
people next to me aren't in headsets, and I go and they think I need the high, they are jumping towards me. My husband's like, it's just how she laughs. I said, no, it's how she's back away. It's how she laughs. She's fine.
That's amazing.
So I do have, I think my dad could appreciate humor, but I think it's that whole thing of like, who's going to be the, you know, this is the middle child. Who's going to lighten it up? Who's going to be the clown? Definitely trying to make my mom and sister laugh. God, it meant so much to me to make them laugh after my dad and brother died. It meant so much to me. I started doing impersonations of society ladies.
Oh,
I started their little accents. This the real southern ones. I'd start doing it, you know, Judy and that buffet, which, you know, I'd start, and there was one, I can't even do them now, but I would do the most ridiculously lame imitations. I would say nothing funny
or I would do the same thing over and over again, and they would just be wetting their pants. Uh-huh. And that was the most as anyone in comedy knows, the drug you crave is the laughter of others. Yeah. And that is the high, and you ride it like you're surfing, and it's fantastic and delicious. So I did that. And the other piece that's interesting is that, you know, I kept trying to like be on court and stuff. I kept trying to like be nice to everyone, have everyone like me and look really good. And it's just not, I'm just too lazy and too messy and perhaps too ADD to pull it together. But I did in junior high, there was these things called superlatives. And my one steady Eddie best friend got best all around, which I would have loved. There's cutest, there's best all around, there's, you know, most talented, smartest. You know, I would have loved any of these. I got wittiest.
And oh, I was that's like, pretty great.
I didn't know I was witty. I'm actually much of a wit. I'm more of a goofball.
I think the people who described it weren't thinking about Oscar Wilde.
They weren't thinking about Oscar Wilde. And frankly, at that point, it was just that I was enough of a freak. I was just enough of a goofy freak already.
Yeah.
The family hadn't completely fallen apart yet. It was on its way, but it hadn't completely fallen apart. The shit hadn't totally hit the fan in terms of like family tragedy. But I think it's because I was a bit of a freak and would whore myself out for a laugh. I would. Mm-hmm. I would be a goofball. I would do whatever.
Did you do theater or anything like that?
And then I did do theater on and off. Yeah. Absolutely, I did theater on and off. I wasn't a complete theater geek, but yes, I did. On and off throughout, you know, through my younger years and sort of children's theater and junior high and high in community theater and high school, a little bit of high school plays, a little bit at the college I went to, which wasn't it was very much of a non-art school. It was a very academic school. And then I left that after 3 years and went to New York. Just sort of for a summer to take through NYU to take acting at Strasbourg. And then I never left for 12 years. So I basically finished a degree in New York and then, you know, started that thing where I was like just an unknown actor for years. And I had a friend who called me Beth the actress, and I'd say, no, I'm not. Don't tell people that because I'm not an actress and I'm not, you know what? I'm not doing it anymore. Forget it. And so he'd call me Beth the former actress. And then I'd be like, okay, I'm in this touring company of this improv company. And so I was Beth the former actress. So I kept, you know, it's like always, it's like just when you try to, they keep pulling you back in. So for years I told in obscurity in New York as an actress and then found my way because acting classes, boring. Oh my God. It's horrible. It goes till midnight and everybody's just, you know, it's just masturbating with their comments and it's so boring. But then theater games are really fun. So then I found my way into improv for actors and like Viola Spolin in theater games. And I was like, well, this is delicious and delightful.
Yeah.
This acting class shit is ridiculously, but yeah, I want to shoot myself in the ear, but this improv, wow, theater games. And at that point there was no pressure. It was improv for actors and theater games. It wasn't like
comedian.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't friggin' Whose Line.
Yeah.
You know, step up and be funny or be, you know, be in the, you know, the firing squad. So I found my way into improv that way. And then at that point it was pre like UCB and all that. There was really the only paying gig in town was this kind of goofy Upper East Side improv theater called Chicago City Limits. And where some very funny people came out of. Oh, Eddie Pepitone. Does anyone know Eddie Pepitone out there?
Oh, I love Eddie. Sure.
He and I were in the company together.
That's great.
Eddie Pepitone, Paul Scheer came. Paul Scheer used to do lights for us. He came out of that. And then there's a big manager called David Miner who used to do lights.
Oh, sure. I know David Miner. Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
Who's a big, he's like a executive producer on there.
Yeah.
Right. So a lot of people came out of that because at that point it was the only thing there. And I just, I was honing. I was honing my comedy. I was honing. And it's a craft that I love and that I feel like it's what I'm meant to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I love to do it. And I spent many years trying to make myself into something I wasn't in terms of like the kind of comedy I do. Because the kind of comedy I like to do is the real goofy stuff and not the rip you a new asshole stuff that I was doing on The Daily Show for 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
That kind of gave me stomach pains and I had trouble sleeping.
I super understand that.
It was super harsh. No one knew what we were. And it was like you go out and interview David Duke and you ask him questions that otherwise might get you shot, you know. Yeah. Or might get you shot.
Yeah,
you know. And then you try to get out of town. Like, it was hard.
David
Duke deserved it. Yeah. And a couple people deserved it. David Cassidy deserved it, but then some people didn't deserve it. And
yeah,
it made me feel horrible.
I completely relate to that. I feel the same way. I think that I like to sort of pretend that I have that sort of edginess to me, which I guess I can, but it's like,
yeah, I don't really.
It really has to exist for a very specific reason, yeah. And I have to be really personally attached to it. I don't want to just turn that on
for
a job, but like, ultimately,
comedy?
I'd be like, I'm so sorry. Oh, God, I'm so sorry. Yeah.
Oh, my God, I'm bad at it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
satire,
it's not funny,
and like
and
that
I offend
kind of
people and
pranky, and that's all kind of tough.
Yeah, no, I'm not like the dark, edgy comedy gal.
Yeah.
But, I'm kind of old school. I mean, I'm kind of like, was born at the wrong age. In the wrong age, but what I'm doing now, I really love doing is big old goofy stuff. And so anyways, I feel very blessed to have found my way into this and you know, certainly struggled and whatever, but whatever, you know, there's something about bootstrapping it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You just keep on chugging.
Yeah, I agree,
and I'm glad I have.
I want to go back to the boy thing just for a second because I am interested in
about the boy thing.
I'm boys. Interested in this because you as the kind of the crack up and stuff. Like, I will say that where we differ, I think, in that way is that whether or not I ended up dating them, I wasn't necessarily dating like the hilarious guys, but but even like the guys that I dated weren't, you know, they weren't bad boys really. But I just the drug that you described,
the drug of boys,
of bad boys, and then also the drug of you making your mom and your sister laugh, or the feeling of getting a laugh.
Yeah.
To me, because I think probably such a funny dad, and like my dark stuff is from, like, you know, having this great relationship with my dad growing up and feeling like, well, this is all, I had a great relationship with my dad, so these are all the things that I need to have, like, a relationship with a man that feels great.
Yeah.
For me, laughing was a huge part of it. So yeah. I guess I'm wondering, because you had these two kind of like diametrically opposed drugs that were feeding into you, did you ever cross over and like, you know, fall for
man.
A really funny guy who maybe wasn't great for you, but like really made you laugh? Or were those
kind of
separate?
They were separate.
And were you trying to make them laugh, or were you a different girl with them?
There was something from a very early age about, like, when I was in junior high, I sort of agreed to go out with this like dude who had a punk. I got this most horrible punk haircut. Oh, I wish I had a picture of that you could put up on your website. My
Me
horrible,
too.
Like, it was really a mullet.
Mm-hmm.
It was short on top and long in the back, but it was really buzzed. And it went down to a point in the middle of my forehead.
Oh, my.
Like I was Eddie Munster. It was horrible. And there was a leftover perm, so the mullet long part, the party in the back,
wow.
The business in the front, Eddie Munster in the front, and the party in the back was somewhat permed.
Interesting.
I had a lot of ill-advised perms. and then my dad would be like, don't do that again. You know, my dad was like not a very supportive guy. So anyways, he's like, you're pretty except for your nose. You know, it's no wonder that I would seek out these guys who, there was something about like, so the punk guy in junior high, I thought that it was some kind of badge achievement to get a bad boy to like me. I was pretty straight. And there was something just very compelling about someone who had an edge of darkness around him. With this poor punk dude, ended up getting like, there was this other dude who I kind of fooled around with, who didn't even like me. It was like a football player type guy. But punk dude thought he had to protect my honor, and they were going to fight in like Mead Gardens, which is like a swampy area. And, you know, and then poor punk dude, it's like I didn't know him. He was as vulnerable as any friggin' 14-year-old boy could be. You know, he was a sweet guy. There were some dudes who were darker that I was definitely attracted to. But what I realized is, like, I was just sort of picking guys thinking that, God, I don't know, thinking that there was somehow getting some charge or some boost or some badge of honor out of the fact that they were either, like, had an edge, were hard partiers, were sort of, you know, slipped through my fingers. Definitely the commitment phobes. Definitely the guys who nobody was going to sit there and tell me and rub my feet and tell me I was great. Like none of these guys. There was something incredibly compelling about. And when the guys ended up being kind of nicer and actually would maybe, I'd be like, you're not as attractive, you know?
Yeah.
I really need myself a blackout drinker.
Oh my gosh.
Who really is not into commitment. So, yeah.
Which is like one thing when you're a teenager, but then like that yeah, starts to have that, weight, yeah, even more yeah. and more and more increasing weight to it when you're getting yeah. older and, you know, in your 20s or, you know, whatever.
So it didn't, funny men didn't totally turn me on, but I'm married to, you know, I'm married to a guy who has like some darkness in him, but he's also sort of also a fantastic guy with like a, you know, a good heart and you know, interested in, you know, recovery and healing and growth and all that. And he's very darkly funny. I met him on The Daily Show. He was the supervising producer of The Daily Show. So he kind of orchestrated a lot of these sort of interviews I used to do and that were very harsh
yeah,
and edgy. And he has a very harsh, edgy, you know, he comes from like a, it's funny because both my best friend and my husband are Irish Catholic, Long Island, like working class, like, you know, just, you know, where there's a lot of kids and a lot of just like kill or be killed at the dinner table in terms of like your comedy. You know, somebody's making fun of you, you deflect and you mm-hmm. make you're not as bad as that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he's very clever and very funny. And, you know, and I try to make, he's a hard laugh. So I try to make him laugh and it's usually with goofiness. And then, you know, he makes me laugh with his snark.
Uh-huh.
So he's got the snark and, you know, it's, of course, it's like, of course the person I'd find is the person with the kind of a dark sense of humor. But yeah, I was never drawn to like, oh, you know, he's, you know, he's kind of goofy looking, but he's so funny. Like I wasn't drawn to that guy. I really wasn't. There was something compelling about the darkness, which I, you know, which I just think there's a lot of reasons for it. And I think it has to do with my dad. And I think it has to do with the sort of, you know, and in a way that I don't know if this was exactly true for me, but I think there's a way in which I'm scared of intimacy too. So for all this chasing I was doing,
you're still picking people who aren't available.
I'm picking people who aren't available. Yeah. I mean, again, like you said, this is then somebody becomes available.
Yeah,
and this becomes available. I'm like, oh, no, I know. And so,
but I mean, speaking of ADD,
I've got a husband with ADD.
It's like, yeah,
every 101, it's fine. It's there's cliches exist for a reason, and this
exactly.
is a cliche.
Exactly.
Which is that we chase. And any ladies out there, if you're chasing unavailable men, look at.
You guess you don't want a man. Right
perhaps
now.
Perhaps there is a reason you're doing that, and that is a resistance too. There's a fear of intimacy. Of course, I'm scared of effing intimacy. I don't know how to be intimate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I mean, that's why I'm proud of myself for having had friendships, meaningful friendships.
Yeah, absolutely.
That last, you know, but I did say to my very best friend from college, I was like, "Am I scared of intimacy?" And she was recently because I'm just trying to look at all this stuff.
Sure,
again, trying to be a better partner and a better mother and. She's like, you're the most intimate person I know. And I was like, I know, but is it like I'm a flasher? Am I like right here, literally on the podcast? Am I doing like,
right,
am I emotionally
right.
flashing?
Right.
Am I like dropping emotional bombshells and then skittering away?
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to figure that out.
Oh, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Cause it's still almost like, a control thing, right? It's still almost like
sure.
you control how much, when, how, you know,
Jennifer,
whether you put
good.
It out there and then you walk away and you're like, yeah, I did it. And now I'm gone.
Now
so
I'm
you
gone.
Just deal with my intimacy.
You could be a shrink. You do sit here and you shrink the gals. It's good. No, these are good. These are great conversations. And there's a reason why. It's because you have incredible insight. And that's a great insight. That's a great insight. You're right. I have control over it.
I'm just fascinated by people.
I'm gonna flash my you know, body, so to speak, and then I'm gonna run the fuck away.
Yeah.
So you have no access to it.
Yeah.
God, and I've just left you with it. Sit in your lap and I'll leave it there. And, yeah. Yeah.
God, that's so interesting, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you're not a dull person, Bethel. I certainly didn't expect you to be. I knew you wouldn't be, but I'm
so
overjoyed.
Much. I hope it's not getting anyone down. It's kind of rich. It's all kind of rich.
Listen, no, if you want to get people down, I felt myself leaning towards, because I've been feeling a lot of hyper awareness about mortality. I mean, just all the stuff that, you know, most of you, I'm sure, who are interested in the Nerdist Network and who follow, you know, Chris's career. Beth and I were recording this, you know, the day after Chris's father passed away. I loved Chris's dad. Yeah. It's very difficult for me. It certainly isn't as difficult for me as it is for members of his family, for Chris, for, you know, Billy's partner, and all of that. But, you know, just as a human being with feelings, you know, it's just, it's hard and stuff like this yeah. happens. And it reminds all of us about the fleetingness of everything. And yeah. the sort of that vast chasm between your brain, quote unquote, understanding that something's going to happen. And then your heart going, no, I didn't get this. Like, I didn't get the message. I get that you thought that you were prepared or that we're all supposed to always be prepared. And then something happens and we're not, and you still have to bridge that gap and all that. And so I've been feeling that kind of like, I've talked about it on the podcast before, like that sort of what I now feel is like this sort of flower that opens and closes depending on like how much grief I'm feeling. It's like
you're doing it at your heart.
Yeah. It just feels like it's in there.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's sometimes, you know, if it's like in a weird way, it's like reverse sunshine darkness. If like it gets the bright light of like tragedy shone on it, it like flowers open and I feel like I there can't, comes, there's not enough room right, for right, it. For and then it kind of closes back up, but it's always there. And I've just been feeling that flower a lot the last few days for a number of different reasons. And so when you started describing what happened with your dad and your brother, I just started to feel myself tipping over into that place, which is like
big feelings.
I go dark fast. My dark is like worrying about fear and pain in others. And so my immediate go-to was like, oh God, I hope they didn't have to experience any prolonged fear, because I just think fear is like the ugliest thing.
It just, I think so that, the good news about hypothermia is that it goes sort of quickly and you numb out. I don't know what it's worth. God, this is dark.
No, it's just very dark.
And but the like, bad news is that my brother went first.
So sad. I mean,
oh my God, it's so sad.
Why would I bring that back up? But my point is, my point was, my point was, I didn't want you to think that you were being dark or that this is a dark episode, because I really could have taken you down a really dark. Of course you are.
I mean, I'm on psycho, you know, pharmaceuticals, and that helps. Because that does feel like a lot of my...
But you don't feel nothing. You know what I'm saying? No, like people who are just disappearing into things to not feel anything.
I function well.
You have to be able to function.
And I'm like a loving parent and I try to be a loving friend and I try to show up for people in work. And I, you know, and that's with the help of the meds and a lot of support and support networks and, you know, professionals and all that. But, you know, just to bring it back to something a little more light is that Louis C.K. did this bit on Conan somewhat recently about smartphones and why he doesn't want to get his kid his girl's smartphones. And he talked about his own experience being in a car, listening to a Bruce Springsteen song that I don't know, although Conan knew it, and that where it's a sort of a mournful song, and at some point Bruce sort of yells, you know, a wail song, a mournful yell in the distance that he sounds far away. And Louis C.K. said it got him, like it just was like, it was this incredibly emotional, it was the, what you call the flower opening, but perhaps too much in the tipping.
Yeah.
And, you know, the tipping that we can all feel of like, oh, here I go into this, am I going to get lost?
Yes.
Am I going to get quicksanded into this sadness? And I feel like I spent a lot of years running from that. And I feel like I now know that it can't, I won't get lost. I'm strong enough to hold. And but what's interesting is what Louis C.K. said is that his impulse then was to go to the phone and he just texted just a buttload of people, which he called it the emotional jack off of the phone. Like I'm gonna numb with the, and I took people. And then he said, no, pull the, you know, like he pulled to the side of the road. I'm just going to cry. I'm just going to cry, because to feel that then lets me feel the other stuff.
Absolutely.
The and numbing, that is, you know, so the numbing key. Out, the jacking off, the numbing out, that, you know, the metaphorical, whatever we're doing to numb out, which is, we all need our little numbing, right? As long as it's in check. But I think we all also have to recognize that the feelings, especially in today's world where, you know, it's Facebook and it's this and it's all very surface and bright and fast moving and you know, it's kind of like, let's get real. Let's have a real feeling. Because if you have a real feeling that's painful and it doesn't sink you, I mean, I think that's the thing. We get to know ourselves better. We know if we're going to sink. But if you can have it enough, so you don't tip out of your zone, right? And then you can also feel all the richness.
and the love that cracks you open.
Absolutely.
And the joy that cracks you
absolutely
open.
And like how grateful I am. And I think one of the reasons that I feel better when I give myself a break about like being in entertainment instead of feeling like I'm supposed to be doing something that's like extremely more like being a therapist or being a teacher or whatever.
You're doing what you're meant to be doing. If but it feels good, you're meant to be doing it. Look what you're doing here to all these people who listen. And then I ate your podcast up. Like it
just means so much to me, Beth.
Like it was gummy vitamins. Yeah. It was good for me and delicious.
But I think that's what, that's too why like especially, the things that are silly feel like such gifts because the heavy stuff is so heavy. Yeah. So why not, you know, like just completely delight at something super silly or be like so joyful about the fact, like I get so choked up when I see live music because I just go to this place of like, I'm so glad we figured this out as humans, like that we need this thing that we have to have that because things that are hard are so hard. And so
that's a really childlike sense of this wonder, way which so deeply. And I feel like it's important to cultivate that sense of awe and wonder about whatever it is. You know, sunsets, the ocean, music, dance, I don't know, a book,
and
this, still, whatever.
Goofy,
just whatever.
Cute animals on the internet, if you need I get it. Go to Disneyland,
laugh. Get your endorphins going.
Absolutely.
You know, but I do think that what I've liked about having kids is the just that you get to re-experience the childlike sense of wonder at all these, you know, wonderful things that we take for granted, and that you're experiencing that with live music, which I don't really. I can actually.
Nostalgic. It depends. It almost doesn't even depend what it is. It could be like just, you know, a symphony, but it could be like.
But that you're glorying in it.
Yeah.
It rings your bell.
Yeah.
And you're like, damn, this is delicious. And it's ringing my bell.
And going to a museum. Anything that like people have made that is completely useless in the sense that like this isn't like a cure for an illness. This isn't a pipe that allows us to pipe water through so that we can drink. And I mean, to your point, but just like, you know, Alexander Calder felt compelled to make circus animals and people out of wire and cloth just because he could. And that just makes me so glad.
We have to do what we're called to do.
Yeah.
And again, you can't shoot on yourself. When you're doing, do you like doing this podcast? Because I do.
Oh my gosh, it's like the most important thing in my life.
it's so great, and you're being called to do it. And I'm doing a job now that I really, really enjoy.
What's your show that
I'm embarrassed to say?
Is it a kid's show?
Well, it's supposed to be for families, but it's on a kid's channel.
Listen, I do a cartoon, and it's like my other favorite thing in my whole world of life.
It's supposed to be for families. They're trying to bring back the old 80s family sitcom. It's called Dog with a Blog. It's about a talking dog. You should watch it because there's a really cute dog on it.
Totally watch it.
An incredibly funny man who voices the dog.
I will totally watch it.
Dog with a Blog on the Disney Channel. I have a lot of fun doing it. It pays almost nothing. It pays more than a podcast.
Yeah, I mean,
but much less than any other TV
job. Yeah, that's the thing. I know. I think about that too. I'm like, God, I will totally go be a wacky mom on a Nickelodeon show. Like, I'm perfectly happy with that.
It's so fun. It's so great.
As long as I can, like, put food on the table. But that it gets a little tricky with, like, the sort of, like, value placed on. Even,
Yeah, and it's right. So I can't, you know, I try to let go of the ego stuff because it's like, in terms of comedy cachet, it's a negative value. But you kind of can't care. At some point, you kind of fucking can't care about this stuff anymore. It really is. It's like the junior high behind. I got to leave the junior high behind.
Absolutely. And that's very hard to do in this city. And that's why
it's very hard to do in
this
city. As people say, like, it's the industry. It's high school with money. I mean,
absolutely.
Absolutely. There's a lot of spiritual battles that I have to wage.
Correct.
To not be a crazy actress.
I know.
To not be a cuckoo.
Best or worst version of ourselves. We've picked something that can turn us into the best or worst versions of ourselves. Okay, I gotta get into this MASH game because I know you have somewhere to be. I.e. work. The talking dog show.
How literal I am and dingy I am. I did a podcast where someone said, so Dog with a Blog, what's that about? And I go, well, there's a dog who can talk, and he has a blog.
I thought they were the most.
I thought they were serious. I thought they were earnest in their questioning.
And your answer,
they weren't.
Was
they were being ironic.
Repeat the title of the show with a few extra words thrown in.
Who has a blog?
Correct.
And it just that's how bad I am. Instead of getting people's like funny.
Listen, the dog represents the Constitution of America. Now, let's try to make it even deeper.
Okay, let's try to make it do math.
Okay, so all right.
I love that you have your own notepad. Did a fan make that for you?
Yes, I have to say that
you have super fans.
This was made by a joint effort by two of my fans who became what I like to call associate producers on the show. Jules and Victoria. Shout out to my ladies. Who, by the way, one lives in New Zealand and one lives in the Pacific Northwest, and they're actually now planning a visit so that they can meet, which is kind of the best thing ever.
How the JV Club does great things in this world.
It's like pen palmanship almost.
It does great things in this world.
Okay, so first one for you, I'm going to go with a skill that you wish you had that can be a completely useless skill, or it can be like something that you really feel like you need to be better at, but you know, as whimsical or silly as you might want to go is fine, whether it's an instrument or being able to fly or being able to juggle.
Wait, and how many do I give you again?
Three.
Can I just tell you what I like to do and then what I would do? Because sometimes I know you ask people like, what would you do if you weren't an actor?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I wish I was really, really good at, because I'm okay at dancing.
Yeah.
But I'm still a little bit of a gawky version. I wish I was a fantastic dancer.
Love it.
Because I love to dance.
Love it.
And I want to like win dance awards.
Love it.
I was just a fantastic dancer. I wish I used to be. I walked in your house and said, are you a designer? And you're like, I used to be. I wish that I was, I love home dec.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I love the HGTV. I wish that I had more of a gift.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an incredible bargain shopper. So I can go to Home Depot and I can just be like, this looks like Restoration Hardware. I'm going to get this and I can like flip a house.
That's a definite
skill. But I wish
skill.
I had better skill that I could really just do it and not need a designer. And could just
love
do it.
It
and help do it and have that as a backup career.
Great.
And then finally, a skill I wish I had. I wish I were better. Computers make me cry. I wish I were better at, they make me cry. I can't figure out the things in my new car that are computer based.
Yeah.
I wish that all came supernaturally to me and didn't make me cry.
Great. That's a great one. Please. It's great.
I don't want to do it as a career. It would make my life easier.
Yes. Yes. Completely understand. All right. I'm going to go with three places that you have never been that you would like to visit that you will soon be going to imminently.
Ooh, there's the Bali thing with the like the, you know, your hotel, you know, thatched hut.
Yeah, thatched hut over the water.
Thatched hut over water.
Great.
Bali. You know, let's see, because there's things like, oh, I've never been to Egypt, but there's places, or I've never been to India, but there's places where there's just a lot of poverty.
Yeah.
And I know it's kind of rough.
Yeah.
I know it's rough. I have never been to, let me see.
Have you traveled a lot?
I have traveled a ton.
So you have. So I've been to Africa.
And I've been all over South America.
That's so great.
I used to, my mom was really into traveling. My parents traveled. So I got I have the travel bug.
We can amend this too, to be like a place that like the next place you're going back to too.
Okay. So
like
the next place I'm going back to, like, I'll tell you what was gorgeous was Prague. Was gorgeous.
I'd love to go to Prague.
So I'd love to go to Prague. And I'll tell you also, Berlin was like just super hip.
Yeah, that's
so groovy. And I went to those over a decade ago.
Yeah.
Like Prague when it was just getting discovered. And then, but people then say Warsaw got really hip. And then like, you know, Budapest. And so some of those like funky Eastern Europeans, like go discover the funkiness of some of those Eastern European cities. But then also like,
I just wrote down Bali, Prague, and Berlin.
Okay, that's cool. Because then now I want to I want to go to Greece.
Yeah.
I want to cruise in the Mediterranean. I want to go to, the Ibiza. You know what?
Ibiza. Do some dancing with you. Listen, you could be the fantastic dancer.
Okay, let's cross out Berlin and put Ibiza.
Okay, great. Me either. How about languages? Three languages you wish you could speak fluently.
I have struggled to speak Spanish fluently for so long. I have to put that down. Great. I speak Spanglish to a lot of people in who I interact with on a daily basis in California, and they may or may not think I'm just a dumb. Spanglish. I wanted to speak fluent Spanish. I would like to speak fluent Italian. Is it cheesy to go all romance languages? French, Italian, and Spanish.
I think I throw in Japanese because I feel like I'd be super cool if I did.
You would be so cool. And by the way, if you spoke Chinese, then you would be like, the language that you probably will need to speak in the future because the population is going to tip. It's so interesting. It's like Latin American studies minor in college, but I was never to Asia.
The romance languages are just musical in a way that are so pleasant. I love the romance languages.
I love Europe and I love South and Central America, and I'm not that interested in Asia or the Asian languages. Mm-hmm. So there we go. Sorry if this anyone's Asian. I love you and I think you're beautiful. But
I know.
Speaking. Yeah. It's also be a bitch to learn, but okay. Yeah. Moving on.
That's okay. This is your MASH game. You don't have to apologize
for anything. It's my MASH game. It's my world.
How about three books that you can jump into at any time? Whether that's a children's book, books from your youth, books that you love now.
Are you going to edit out the pauses? Because I'm going to have to think on these.
No, I probably won't because I like to use these pauses to let the listener also consider what they would pick. So for those of you who are waiting for Beth to come up with something.
This is cheesy and embarrassing, but if it's a children's book, I've read them as an adult.
Yeah.
There's a wonderful writer, and I'm not going to be embarrassed to turn people on to her.
Please don't.
Eva Ibbotson.
Okay.
Because she's considered a children's writer, but she doesn't consider herself a children's writer. She actually has written children's books, including a short story about like Platform 9.5 that was then pretty much lifted directly and put into Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And J.K. Rowling kind of admits that, and Eva Ibbotson said, oh, it's flattering. Eva Ibbotson didn't have an issue. But so she's got some children's books out there, but then she writes what's considered this young adult romance, although I think she would like it to be also just adult romance that takes place. Eva Ibbotson herself was a young girl and they had to flee, I believe, not Germany, but the country next to it that has the Poland? Danube, Hungary or no. It's,
yeah. No, wait, no, isn't that right?
Vienna, Austria. They had to flee Austria. They had to flee Austria and they went to England and it was like they had to leave all their wealth behind. And her parents were professors. And so she writes a lot of stories about this period, but some of them are more turn of the century and some of them are, and they're all like with this plucky young heroine and she's a ballerina or she's really bookish, and they're all these sort of delicious, you know, and then there's a dark, older, you know, somewhat haunted, but really also very wonderful hero. It's all up my alley. It's like Twilight, but better, right?
Great.
It's all like Twilight, but better. They're wonderful in terms of just the references to the culture at the time and the books and music at the time and the European cities at the time. And they span their sort of, you know, it's either turn of the century, it's pre-World War I, it's around, you know, or it's World War II. And these little Russia, you know, a little Russian princess who then has to go be a housemaid in England because they've had to flee the Tsars.
It's perfect.
I love them also. Eva Ibbotson. So one of her books, or many of her books, God. And what are the other ones? You know, I read these books that are sort of, you know, dark, and I like them when they like this redemption at the end. What do I want to fly into? I'm reading Harry Potter to Jackson now, but I don't necessarily want to live.
Yeah.
In Harry Potter's world. It's a little scary to me.
It is scary. I might pop in there. I got
to
tell you.
It's a little scary to me. I kind of want my husband to like, let's stop it before book four, at book four. I don't want the death to start. The dementors are enough.
It starts with a lot of darkness in those books. There's no question about that. How are we doing on time? What time? Let me tell you right now that it's 2:36. Is that bad?
2:36. Oh my God. It's bad. Oh my God. The book question. Oh God. There's so many books that I love that I can't think of right now. Okay, let's just say
No, I wouldn't want to live. Like, I'm an Austin fan, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I love
Austin. You don't have to go live in there permanently, just though. This is like a pop-in.
Okay, let's like pop in.
You could pop into Harry Potter for the fun stuff.
Let's hang out with Dumbledore. And, yeah. Let's just great. Pop in.
No problem with that.
And then let's pop into... oh, my God. I've been listening to so many self-help books or parenting books recently. Like... what have I listened to? Okay, go on to another question and I'm going to come back.
Great, no problem.
I'm passing like on Family Feud.
You are passing on Family Feud. Okay, what about, now it's going to get like, I'm getting more and more fictitious. So this could be a worse challenge, but, vacation home in a totally fictional place, whether that's like the Shire or, Mars you know.
Oh yeah. See, you're just more, fanciful than I am. You're more whimsical than I am. Okay. So, right. But what's like I want a vacation home, but is there like a beach community that's fictional?
Oh, let's think of a, that's fair. That's fair.
I want to be on a beach community that's entirely delicious and free of all assholes. And
well, then I'm just going to create this beach community right now.
Right. And it's not creepy. It's not, it's not Stepfordian.
Yeah.
It's just really relaxed. It's like, maybe it's undiscovered Costa Rica or something. Or, right. It's that kind of thing. Okay. And then, I wouldn't mind living in, oh my God, the Shire. You're so funny. The Shire. No, why would I?
I know. Some people just immediately they know exactly what they would do.
This is so not me. It's like, I'm really comfortable in Valley Village. I'm really comfortable in my suburban home.
All right. Then it could just be three vacation homes in a real place. So you've got a beach community. That's a real place.
And then let's have a lake community.
Great.
I like water. Water's really restorative. I was just down at the beach yesterday. I like lakes better than beaches. I was just down in the Pacific, oceans. So cold, but I always got to stick my feet in. My son and I go stick our feet
put
in.
Put a toe restores. In at least. Yeah.
It's restorative, man.
Yeah.
And then the final one would be in, I don't know, could it be in like Rome or something?
Sure. Why not? But along a river, then you can still have some water.
Oh yeah. That'd be great.
I'm putting you in
Venice, if it weren't stinky. I've never been to Venice. I should have put that down as a place to visit.
Oh, it would be.
But it's supposed to be stinky, Venice, right? When the canals.
I didn't think it was that. I mean, when I was there, I don't remember thinking it was that stinky. It was a little fishy smelling, but I don't know. That just made it more exotic for me.
Yeah, okay. So let's say somewhere in Italy.
Great. Perfect.
Somewhere fantastic in Italy. That's so lame. Sorry, guys.
No. It's 100% okay. How about you own, there is absolutely no stress to it, but you also are like a partner in a restaurant that's very successful. It's very easy. You don't have to think twice about it, but it's there's three different restaurants that you might be a successful partner in.
I only ate at this once. Susan Fenniger's The Street.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yeah. That's a great one.
And then I know everyone loves, they have their sushi favorites.
Mm-hmm. Many do, many
I
do.
I happen to just love Aroha here in Studio City. And if it was just stress-free, mm-hmm. I could just go and have my table and not have to pay.
Yeah, you got your table, exactly.
And then what's another really fun place? Of course, we never go out. I'm so lame. We never go out. I haven't read a piece of fiction.
Please, you have a family. It's all right.
I don't go out to dinner.
You have a job and a family.
I'm so busy. Thank God we're not talking about the news. I'm in a news blackout. I have no idea what's going on.
I also have no idea.
Elections or politics. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then the last restaurant would be, where's a place where everything was delicious and it's like small plates and you just,
little tapas place?
Little tapas place.
Doesn't even have to be a specific one. You have a delicious tapas place. I love it.
Everyone has to share food because sharing food is my favorite thing to do and eating a little bit of everything is my favorite.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
Hopefully I will make lunch on set and get a little bite of everything on that.
Yeah, I do love a buffet for that reason. Especially a good like breakfast.
Good.
Buffet,
it has to be good.
Like,
it has to be good. I mean, it can't really be no sitting point. In a warming tray. Like the, you correct. Know, they're hash browns and they're soggy.
It can't just be volume and, that you're gross. Attracted to. Understood. Yeah. Okay. What about three?
Yeah, the fancy.
Well, maybe I should do this. Like three foods. Do the three foods question. The like no. There's no negative ramifications and no limit.
Like how many you like
whenever you want it. Exactly.
I won't have lactose intolerance. I love macaroni and cheese.
Great. That's top of the list. There we go.
Last night I ate half a box of After Eight mints.
Oh, I love After Eight
from the fridge. And I'm not like I'm not like a chocolate binger, mm-hmm. and I'm not whatever. I just needed comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept going to the After Eight mints.
I get it. Was it After Eight?
And it was after.
Well, then it was you've between done nothing 8
and
10. Wrong.
Listen, and you're you not supposed that it was to eat 6 p.m. right before going to bed. And I was still, I was like, should I brush my teeth or should I eat after 8 mint? I'm going to eat after 8 mint or 3. And I'm going to go to bed without brushing my teeth. Like it was that time of night.
Great.
I was just eating after 8 mints.
Am I putting after 8 mints on here? No, that's just a reference.
You are.
Great. Of course
after
I am.
After 8 mints and macaroni and cheese.
8 mints and third?
The third is probably like a great French fry.
Oh yeah.
I'm just
why
a real
not?
Fan of like
I'm surprised
fried
people
savory.
Haven't said French fries more because French fries are like the perfect
French fries
delicious
are like a little
treat.
French like a frite.
Yeah. Forget
with
it.
With a mayonnaise dipping
oh,
aioli
God.
Thing.
Done. Fantastic.
Yeah. I bet they serve those at Susan's Vinegar's the street. I've only been once.
I'm sure she probably does.
If
I've
not,
only been
I,
once
when
too,
I have part
I
ownership,
fries.
I will ask.
Oh, certainly when you have part ownership. Are you kidding me? All right. Last question is styles. Three styles that you don't really feel for whatever reason that you can pull off. But
oh my God, I wish
fun.
I could pull off so many more styles.
So which styles
I
would you
wish
pull off? Old school could be from the 20s, could be
I
anything.
Wish I could pull off a little more of the like dress like a gentleman, like a Annie Hall, like
me
a high
too.
Trouser Lauren Hutton.
Yes.
Were you making this reference? I feel like someone's made this reference recently of like a I've got pockets in my pants and they flare out and I've got a nice heel on and mm-hmm. I've got a blouse that's beautifully cut.
Absolutely.
And
impeccable.
You know, I'm a yeah, I'm from
you're
the
tall
40s.
Too. You have just the perfect picture.
I'm the 40s.
Yeah, I think you have the perfect figure for that.
Slump, and if I just was a little more well put together, my husband said when he met me, I dressed like a laundry basket, and that still is my impulse. I feel like I'm a little laundry basket.
Side note: that looks absolutely adorable today.
It's
so
a little laundry basket-y.
That's ridiculous.
So, like my shoes are really socks. They're like Uggs that are made
well,
of like.
Well, I get away with wearing
like,
basically pajamas
really
whenever possible. All right,
kind of a pajama top.
So I've got your sort of Annie Hall, but like
okay,
kind of together.
Okay, together. Would that I, you know, I'd love to be able to wear, you know, heels. I'd love to be able to wear, heeled boots. Like, let's say like a heeled mm-hmm. boot and a leather jacket.
Great.
And
great.
Jeans, right? Like I'm just,
great.
I'm sexy.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic rich leather. I'm not
great.
Too cheap to have paid $500 for the leather
right.
boots and $1,000 for the coat. Cause in real life I am too cheap to have done that.
Yeah.
And I don't mind heels and
right.
I don't mind that I'm constricted by the, in real life, I'm like my son. I want to only wear soft clothes.
Yes.
He says I only want to wear soft clothes.
Understood.
So the fact that you've got like an under, like a shirt and then a blouse and then a sweater with a belt. To me, it's already so structured that
and
I couldn't pull it
it's
off.
It's because I was so cold because I didn't hadn't turned
but
on the heat.
But you pull it
here.
Off so
wow.
beautifully.
Bless
this is a
heart.
Green, there's a navy, there's a white. Is this a Tory Burch color scheme happening?
Oh, boy.
So, okay, yes. And so then let's make that the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make it like a beachy preppy.
Yep.
A beachy preppy.
Totally get it.
A Tory, like the Jack Rogers sandals.
Yep.
There's going to
totally
be a
it.
Coral. And it's going to be, you know,
yeah.
and there's going to be a
that's great.
A
this
little,
could really
tunic.
Work on some of these travels that you might end
it's
up going
true.
On. Final thing was the book, coming back to a book.
Right, a third book. Shit, I didn't spend mm-hmm, the time thinking mm-hmm. about it.
Dr. Seuss, Anne of Green Gables. I'm just throwing out some suggestions.
I didn't really read Anne of Green Gables, did I?
Encyclopedia Brown, Solving a Mystery.
I didn't read any of these things. Where were we happy? We were in a happy place. Matisse said you can be like, you can be deep and happy. I want to be deep and happy. Oh. Like, where's a happy book? Because I'm just thinking, like, what are the books that, like...
No, there's a lot of... Strum and Drong in a lot of books. I'm looking over at my books. I don't think any of them are going to be helpful.
Are they?
So far, a lot of those are nonfiction, so that's not that fun. There definitely is like a... I don't know.
What was it like a... Yeah, I mean, because there was one I was just thinking about today that was written by Abraham Ferghese, Cutting for Stone, which I read twice in a row. I was so moved by. Do I want to live in it?
You don't want to even pop in. I get it.
Holy
I
God,
get it.
I didn't want to pop in, right? Popping into something delicious
or popping into something that'd just be fun to try.
I mean, don't you think it would be fun to go into Diagon Alley with your son and just like pop around and eat some Birdie's mini flavored beans
and delight him
and get him a wand and
There's Dementors don't exist.
No, exactly.
There's no danger that Voldemort's going to pop up.
It's much lighter fare.
You know, Lucius Malfoy won't even show his face because he's a bastard.
No, there's you guys go to wherever you want to go.
And Dumbledore, by the way, Dumbledore's always watching out. Dumbledore could be he could be my protector figure, like in my life.
Oh yeah, that's a good
one. He has a lot to do. Like, he's not always there for Harry, but if Dumbledore were always there watching out in a godlike way, I could really tuck him in the back pocket of my consciousness.
I super get it. All right, I'm gonna get you out of here. Okay. Tell me when to stop. One, two, three, four, five. Okay. Pausing this. If you need to take a potty break before you scream out to work and stuff, I'll be right back. I got it, but I just realized that I was just saying offline that I forgot to ask you for your crush. I wonder who they would have been. Oh, yeah. I could just figure it out. Do you have three that you could... You have to be super extemporaneous because you're out of time.
I know, because I'm out of time. I loved Liam Neeson when he was younger.
Yes.
A little old for me now. I loved him when he was younger.
Yep.
I loved Alan Rickman when he was younger. Agreed. I don't even know if I
adored
Sense and Sensibility, right?
Yeah, but even like I thought he was I liked him as a bad boy in Die Hard.
Oh, I didn't.
That was the first time I saw him.
This is so random that I haven't seen Die Hard. I have such holes in my basic knowledge and pop culture really knowledge and history knowledge. Okay, cheese me out, but I'm going to say R. Pats, not as R. Pats, but R. Pats as Edward Cullen, Robert Pattinson.
Oh, R. Pats. Okay, got it.
Your younger listeners and the 16-year-old and all of us will appreciate that. That was very extemporaneous because I could now spend the night up thinking about who I should have said.
Well, I'll tell you what. I just did a quick 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 with your picks, and I can tell you that you ended up with young Liam Neeson.
Oh, he's so hot and great. And he was like a loving husband.
Oh, very much so.
You know, I saw him and her in Anna Christie on stage before they were when they met each other, and the heat was palpable.
Oh, that's so exciting.
The heat was palpable on stage. I love that you bore witness to that. That's when they fell in love, yeah.
Well, listen, now you've got your own claim on young Liam Neeson, and you guys can cuddle up together in your Italian shack. Up with a shack, but I think it's very romantic.
Oh, but it's Italian.
You definitely are somewhere in Italy, and that's just your vacation home, so no worries. It's just small and gets
our regular home will be in suburban Los Angeles.
There you go.
In Valley Village.
Now, strangely enough, you also speak fluent Spanish. You did not get fluent Italian in your languages.
That's okay.
So,
they understand you when you speak fluent Spanish.
They're very close. The romance language, you're going to be all set. You're going to be just fine. You're going to pop over and have a nice visit back over to Prague. So please enjoy that.
I'll just take a little air jaunt.
Yeah, get a little air jaunt going.
Fantastic visit.
I want to also congratulate you on your ability to pop into one of Eve Ibbotson's books.
Oh, I'm so happy.
You can really just get that all over yourself.
I love Eve Ibbotson's books.
A couple of things that I think marry well together is that not only do you put on a very nice gentleman-inspired ensemble that's very tailored and very graceful.
Catherine Hepburn is what I was thinking.
Catherine Hepburn. But you also have a real eye for interiors.
So
the shack is very well appointed. Very well appointed indeed.
Great taste.
And then on the food front, I want to assure you that at any moment, anywhere, anytime, not surprisingly, because you're in Italy much of the time, but you have infinite access to macaroni and cheese with no negative ramifications whatsoever.
Great. It is my favorite food.
But when you're back home and in comfortable Valley Village, you also can pop into a Rojo Sushi and have your sushi.
Shout out to my Rojo.
Whenever you like.
I love it.
I'm going to get you off to work to your lunch so that you can have a little bit of everything.
But I want to say
I'm so thrilled that you reached out because you absolutely are someone that I
because I like love
the
all these women that you're interviewing. I'm eating this stuff up and
well,
I'm just
I get
like,
very like what's right in front of me. So it's like, oh, I saw Kate Micucci. Here she is. And I haven't seen you in so long.
No, we haven't seen
and
each
the second
so
I saw your name, I was like, oh my God, she's my like a dream podcast guest. So I'm so glad it worked out.
Included in the JV Club. I'm so
And you certainly are on Twitter because that's how
I am on Twitter. It's hard for me to get to it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to, you tell me when and I'll do my shout outs and stuff. And then we'll get some younger listeners maybe. I'll say it's a little, it's a tiny bit PG-13, but that's
And you can tell them that it's the girl who does the voice of Cora, because maybe some of the kids who watch your show, not to say families, my show is a family show also.
Yeah.
Some good kid show crossover and some good family show crossover. And thanks again.
This is all good info for the young gals. Thanks, babe. It was great. All right. Loved it.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you next time. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.